Okay, thank you. I was about to apologize, but Joe did it first. So there are many figures that I don't know how to draw, and it's a pity that you won't see them. So that's the reason for doing a presentation like that. And then another point, Joe asked it to be pedagogical, so I guess I'll have to go slower than what we have in the presentation. So please ask questions and stop me whenever you have a problem. Okay, so we're going to talk about brain tilings, and I guess this is we are doing this thing since 2005. This is an efficient way of constructing conformal field theories. At first, we thought it's conformal field theories in 3+1 dimensions, but now it turns out that you could very easily extend it to 2+1 dimensions. So infinitely many conformal field theories in 2+1 and 3+1 dimensions that have an ADS dual. The focus of the talk will be on physics of M2 brains, because that's what we've been doing recently, but perhaps I'll do some kind of a reminder of what you could have in 3+1 dimensions. And we will also talk about Chomsky-Simons theories. So here's the list of collaborators. So the, every person has a name and the photo. There's many of them, so just be prepared. That's Alberto from Milan, Yang Hui, Oxford. Well, I don't know why it's funny, but David is going to Stony Brook. Veg, David. Thanks.
Now you're blocking the other.
Where should I start? Okay, that's Sebastian from here. Gemo from Pohang. Diego is from Princeton University. Actually, I never met him, so. And these are the students from Imperial College, Nopadol, Giuseppe, and John. Okay, good. That's so much for the photos. Okay, the motivation, I thought of several motivations. The first one I said, this is to introduce a large class of superconformal field theories in 2+1 dimensions. And I should say that this is a bit of information that, let's say, a year ago, we did not know about it. So that's a very nice advancement. The second motivation is to answer the question of the world volume theory on a stack of M2 brains. So we have proposals for that, and we could now concretely go and check what it is and the properties of each such solution. And this point about Chomsky-Simons theories, The interesting feature about it is that Chomsky-Simons theories have been written since the 80s, and there was a lot of nice work about that in the context of topological invariants, and we even heard a talk about it. It went all the way to the condensed matter community, and they are using some results from this field. Now, the idea there is to take a free manifold, to write down a pure Chomsky-Simons theory and compute correlation functions, and by this to get topological invariants of the manifold. Now, here we're going to take a different approach. We're going to supersymmetrize them, so not just matter fields, but also, sorry, not just gauge fields, but also matter fields. And the role of the Chomsky-Simons is going to take a very different role. We're going to ask questions about the moduli space of vacua, and then it's going to play a very different role. So that's why I wrote here that we will understand John Simon's theories, we'll have a different perspective on those theories. The last point is about the relation between algebraic geometry and Euler gauge theory, since we're going to write down gauge theories for moduli spaces which are algebraic manifolds. It's going to give a very nice interplay between those two fields of study. Okay? So that's the part of the motivation. Now let's talk about the problem from ADS-CFT perspective. So we want to ask what's the theory dual to ADS-4 times H7, where H7 is Sasaki-Einstein. And that reminds me of the talk by Sean last week. And I've, in fact, in his talk last week, he gave a set of examples that we know nothing about the gauge theory dual. Here's a set of examples for which we have both the gauge theory and the Sasaki-Einstein 7. We have quite a lot of information on both sides. So then one can, once you have the Sasaki-Einstein and the gauge theory, you could test various tests of the type that he was thinking about.
He needed some scalar decoupled modulus.
I don't know which one of them. There's plenty of scalars, so I suppose this is some kind of a generic scalar. The thing that I got from his talk was that this scalar had some specific scaling dimension. So we could look at the space of chiral operators and check which of those operators have this precise scaling dimension. That's one thing. And then, yes, so then we are going to discuss this M2 probing Calabi-R, which are cones over Sasaki-Einstein 7. Good. So now, in order to get into this framework of brain tilings, let's recall what happens in 3 plus 1 dimensions. And there is also an ADS-CFT story over there. That's one approach to start talking about it and say that if we take three brain probing a non-compact Calabi-R 3, then the dual geometry is ADS-5 times H5, where H5 is Sasaki-Einstein. And the Sasaki-Einstein is the base of this Calabi-R. And the best description of the gauge theory is in terms of brain tilings. In fact, what I can say is I can take the brain tiling to produce, to generate a pair of dual theories. It will give me the gauge theory, and it will also give me the Sasaki-Einstein manifold. Those which are toric. Okay. Yeah, so this is given by the brain tiling.
Yeah, and you can derive
a
geometry from any
dictionary. Yeah, there is a procedure which, if it's toric, then we can.
There are lots of non-toric examples, though. Right? I mean, in principle, people have not studied them much, but there are plenty of singularities which are non-toric.
Yes, and for that, I know only one example, which is not toric and not an orbifold. The rest, which are not toric, are orbifolds. Those are what I know.
No, there are lots of singularity types without known ADS duals. But yeah. Lots of singularity types on the, without known CFT duals. Lots of singularity types for Calabi-Rs, which are not toric. Huge numbers.
Yes. Except that I don't know how to compute the gauge theory dual. I'm only going to show you what I know. So for the Lepetzos, so the Lepetzo 4 is an example for which I know the gauge theory and I know the.
What about DP6?
There are some cases, so C3 mod Z3 cross Z3 is a special type of Delpezzo-C.
I mean, the theory of exceptional collections lets you write down a gauge theory dual for DP6, DP7, DP8. And there's a clear hypersurface description of the singularity. So we know, in principle, what the Sasaki-Einstein manifold is as well. The checks have not been made in as much detail. I think I agree with your statement that for toric singularities, the brain time is the best description, but I don't think it's available as a description for other kinds.
Yeah, it's not a claim that I make. I'm only going to consider toric.
Okay? Which you will define.
What is meant by toric? Yeah. So since this is a pedagogical talk, we could defer these things to later. I don't think it's going to contribute to the next discussion. Nor to the pedagogical aspect of this. And it's good that we talk about those things, but let's also give some chance for the pedagogical aspect. So here's the formulation as a brain tiling, and that gives you the Lagrangian. Okay, so I'm going to take a tiling, and we will see tilings very soon. And I'm going to assign for every face in the tile a UN gauge group. Okay. For every edge in the tiling, I'm going to assign a bifundamental chiral multiplet. And for every node, an interaction term in the superpotential. This is the way I'm going to define uniquely a Lagrangian in 3 plus 1 dimensions. Okay, very simple set of rules. Yeah, it's going to turn out to be the flatness of the tiling. Okay, so beta functions translate to locally flat tile and locally flat node. Locally flat node is the condition that the superpotential has R charge 2. And locally flat face is the condition that the NSVZ beta function is vanishing.
But you cannot do that in 2 plus 1 dimensions.
In 2 plus 1 dimensions, there is no notion of beta function.
This is not beta function.
This is 3 plus 1, right?
This is Yeah. I think her question was in 3 plus 1. Yes. In 2 plus 1, it's not going to happen. Now, here's the difference between 2 plus 1 and 3 plus 1. In 3 plus 1, I will take the UN gauge group to have the typical kinetic term. In 2 plus 1, I'm going to remove that. I'm going to remove the kinetic term, but instead introduce a Chern-Simons term. And that has a coefficient, an integer. And so I need to specify what is that particular integer. For every tile, there will be an integer.
Or the NNK, two integers?
That's the Chern-Simons level. So the number of integers would be the number of gauge groups.
But the level and also just the size of the group, is that right? So there are two integers on each base?
Yeah, except that there is a one overall integer which is shared by all tiles of gauge groups. It's going to be un to the g.
Oh, okay. In both cases, it's the same.
Yes, thing yes, yes. Independent of whether it's 2 plus 1 or 3 plus 1.
2 plus 1 can really have un cross from that. That's allowed.
But I'm not going to consider it. You could, but I don't want to.
The coupling constants are integers, because the coupling constants are integers, they don't run. So those are also conformal.
No, I don't, we could discuss that, but I want to just consider the case where all ranks are equal. Okay. So here's an example of a tiling. So it has three tiles. By the way, I didn't say before, we are going to consider only the tiling in the fundamental domain. This is a periodic array. It has periodicity in two directions. And this periodicity structure has three different tiles, 1, 2, and 3, and corresponds to three gauge groups. Here's the more traditional way of denoting it using the quiver. Right? Now, as we said, every edge is a chiral multiplet. So we have, maybe I have.
Instead of three, you have tiles. I mean, instead of one, you have tiles.
There's one hexagon, right? So this is a hexagonal tiling, but it has three different tiles, right?
So that's a choice you made? I mean, you could have taken a hexagonal, you could have labeled these in different ways too, right?
That's right, yeah. So I could have chosen a fundamental domain that contains four hexagons, and then I would have four gauge groups, right? This will correspond to a different model.
So it's not just the tiling, it's the tiling and the fundamental domain.
Well, I'm just considering the fundamental domain. So when I specify the tiling, I should say, you know, how many tiles are wrapping the torus.
So you need a tiling of the torus, not a tiling of the plane.
Yeah. So it's the way we phrase it is a periodic two-dimensional tiling, but it is a tiling of the torus.
So this is in 2+1 dimensions because you have these extra integers, or?
So we use it, that's the nice feature about it, that we use it both in 3+1 and in 2+1.
And these integers, what do they mean?
Labels of the gauge groups.
Labels? Okay.
Yeah. So I have un cubed, that's the first, second, and third.
I don't think those are good, the integers that he'll use for Chern-Simons levels.
I understand.
They don't
know.
Right. No. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Let's look in more detail. You see that there are three arrows that go from 1 to 2, and three arrows which go from 2 to 3, and three arrows which go from 3 to 1. Okay, altogether 9 arrows corresponding to 9 bifundamental fields. Okay, so those are the gauge fields, matter fields, and the interaction terms. There are 6 of them, and as we said, every node corresponds to a term in the superpotential. There are 6, 3 white, 3 black, corresponding to 6 cubic interaction terms. So if you write it down, you'll find the usual, if you know the Lagrangian for C3 mod Z3, this is going to exactly reproduce C3 mod Z3.
How do you orient your quiver's edges?
So I choose, I pick a convention in which the convention will be such that I pick a convention, right? So each time, so in this convention, the white node is to the left. Okay, that will give you.
I think that those are terms that could be there in the
Well, this is my definition of the Lagrangian, right? So once I pick the tiling, it's not that these are terms that can appear in Lagrangian. This is the Lagrangian. With couplings by convention, and again, that's my definition, the white will appear with the plus sign and black with the minus sign. By definition. Yes, because this one does not say what is the superpotential, and this one does explicitly say that. Okay? That's the advantage of the tiling over the quiver. Okay, here's another example. Periodic array, 2 squares, a chessboard array. There are 2 tiles, and noted 1 and 2. There are 2 arrows which go from 1 to 2. Here's one, and here's the second. And there are 2 arrows which go from 2 to 1 over here. And here's the superpotential in explicit form. The first term corresponds to the white node going around with 4 different fields. And the second term going around the black node with the same 4 different fields, but in a different arrangement. Okay? Now, as you can see, around the white node, the arrows go clockwise, and around the black node, they go counterclockwise. And that's the distinction between those two nodes. So it's called the bipartite tiling, where either you color them differently or the orientation of arrows is different. Another way of saying the orientation is because of this rule over here. As I go around the face, the arrows are alternating in and out. This is in, this is out, in and out. Okay?
Is the rule that every edge should go from white to black, or can you color all the dots black?
No, white are always connected to black, okay, only, and black to white.
Can you have more colors?
I don't know how to define. So you see, my goal is to define a conformal field theory which has an ADS dual, okay? And I give you a very precise prescription for how to do that. Any change in this thing, I wouldn't know what to say. Okay. But I can tell you that every tiling that you'll pick in this way will give you a torical ABR. Infinitely many. Yes. There's no classification of two-dimensional tilings, which are periodic and bipartite as this. If I had, then I'll had.
What I'm asking is different. You have a node with 8 arrows.
Yeah.
How can you guarantee that you actually get caviar?
Okay. That's the.
Maybe the molecular space is bigger.
Yeah, so this is guaranteed by the fact that this piling is two-dimensional. When we compute the details, we can also show what kind of Calabi out it is. Okay, any other questions? Yeah?
I just wondered, is there any advantage for using the same technology rather than
No, they're just the same. I mean, this is the tiling is more intuitive if you think of a brain picture, but from a mathematical point of view, the periodic. Yeah. So I didn't say what is it. There was a question here about periodic weaver. What this question means is that suppose that I will replace this tiling by a dual graph in which every tile is replaced by a node, every node replaced by a face, and every edge is replaced by an orthogonal edge. Then I can draw this thing, and instead of a tiling of this type, what I will get is a periodic weaver with arrows which are connected between nodes. And I'll get faces which are oriented arrows, and that is has the name periodic weaver, and it defines the gauge theory in exactly the same way. So it's equivalent to a Lagrangian.
Does this make sense in a quasi-periodic tiling?
Then you see. Then I cannot guarantee that it will be conformal.
Sorry?
I cannot guarantee that it will be conformal in 3 plus 1, and I'm not sure what will happen in 2 plus 1 dimensions.
I mean, this is the type of torus, not
like it can't be periodic. And if it's quasi-periodic, then how many tiles do we have? Infinitely many?
You can't tile the torus, right?
Okay,
you
so
can't
then.
Tile the torus, but yeah, you could tile the plane with two tiles.
So then I wouldn't know what to say.
Can you tile with different shapes?
Yeah,
this?
any odd-sided, any even-sided tile is just as good as long as it's periodic.
Why even?
Why even? Why even?
Because it's blacks and whites held in
alternate. So as you go around a tile, the arrows alternate in and out.
Okay.
And if it's odd, it cannot satisfy this condition.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
What about like on a Mobius band or anything?
It's a nice guy. It's flat. The advantage of that is that it's flat. But again, I mean, there were some attempts to write down such gauge theories with also with the Klein bundle. I don't know the gauge theory interpretation for that.
Yeah, sorry.
Related to
Maybe that's a different. I mean, it's a different paper.
This way you only get UN, but if you wanted orthogonal gauge groups or something like that, you could something unoriented like that.
You could introduce some orientiform planes into this tiling, and then there is a detailed consideration of what are the fixed points and how the gauge groups are related to each other. We have a paper on that from some time ago, I think 2 years ago, where we constructed the gauge theories, but we haven't studied the notion of conformal invariance over there. Any other questions? Okay. So various features that we said so far. So this is something we said. Arrows are oriented in an alternating fashion. The graph is bipartite, that the arrows are oriented counterclockwise or clockwise. And black and white nodes are connected to white nodes only, and vice versa. So that was your question, Ben. Okay, outside the phase are forbidden, and it turns out that if we think of it in 3+1 dimensions, this is equivalent to anomaly cancellation condition. This is the chiral anomaly, which says that the number of fundamental matter fields is equal to the number of anti-fundamental matter fields. Okay, and by construction, white nodes come with a plus sign and black nodes with a minus sign. Okay, and I should stress again, these rules define unique Lagrangian in 3+1 and 2+1 dimensions with 4 supercharges. Okay, so many talks begin with writing down the Lagrangian. Instead of writing down Lagrangian, I'll show you a tiling, right? So think of it as the Lagrangian. Okay.
You haven't defined it in 2+1 yet because you haven't told us the Chern-Simons levels.
Yeah, so this is an input of the, so in addition.
I'm just complaining that you said these rules. It's these rules plus something else.
Well, there was a previous part there which said that I need to specify an integer.
I see, that's one of the rules, right? Okay. So, which you did not do for any of your examples.
So here, each case has an integer Chern-Simons.
Okay? But your example suppressed all those integers, right?
Yeah, these were examples of tilings, right?
But without satisfying this rule.
Right, because they are going to come further, right?
So you have a canonical identification between a conformal field theory in 3+1 and one in 2+1. Is there a physical reason?
I think
connecting those two theories.
I think
way to see why they should be sort of identified.
You could argue that they are related to each other by t-duality. So if these guys will correspond to, if the 3+1 dimensional tiling will correspond to 3 brain probing a non-compact Calabi R3, then the 2+1 dimension will correspond to a D2 probing the same Calabi R3.
Going to the IR.
To some M2 brain probing Calabi R4. It will be a Calabi R4. Yes, and it's very interesting to study how the Calabi R3 is related to the Calabi R4, which we still did not see. Okay, so here's the Lagrangian. This is the kinetic term for the not kinetic term. That's the Chern-Simons term. Here are the Chern-Simons level. The A runs over the number of gauge groups. These are the matter fields. Those indices are indices of the gauge groups. So XAB is the arrow that starts at A and ends at B. And this term over here is the superpotential that is familiar from 3+1 dimensions. Okay? Any questions? Okay, now the choice of Chern-Simons levels is going to be such that the sum is equal to zero and the greatest common divisor is equal to one. I can also choose the greatest common divisor to be greater than one, and then the moduli space will be an orbifold of the case where it is equal to one. Okay, so it's just a choice for convenience. I can easily relax this condition. But this condition over here is a result, in fact, of the vacuum equations.
So that means some of the levels come to zero.
If all of them are zero, then...
But you said the GCD is one. Does that mean only have non-zero ones?
Oh, so, yeah, some of them can be zero. Some, but if all of them are zero, then it's not interesting. At least two should be non-zero, one minus one. Okay, and here's a bit of a technical point. That's the matrix. I'm going to choose the kernel of this matrix, but let me not get into the details of this one. Okay, so once I write the Lagrangian, the next step that I want to do is to compute the moduli space of vacuum configuration. So I write down the vacuum equations, and I want to look for solutions of these equations. So let's see what we have. This first equation is just the F terms. It's familiar from 3 plus 1 dimensions. Okay. The second set of equations is again familiar from 3 plus 1 dimensions. The left-hand side are what is known as the D terms. And the right-hand side, in 3 plus 1 dimensions, we would call those guys Faeliopoulos terms. But now a very interesting feature is that we have the Chern-Simons levels. So one nice lesson from that is that we should think of Chern-Simons levels as Faeliopoulos terms in 2 plus 1 dimensions. It's a very intuitive notion. Whatever we know and we understand about Faeliopoulos terms in 3 plus 1 dimensions, we should apply in this in 2 plus 1 dimensions, thinking of the Chern-Simons levels as Faeliopoulos terms. Yes, that's right. But here they play a different role. Let's just talk about the third equation, and then we'll go back to this thing.
Can you remind me what sigma is?
So sigma is a vector multiplet in 2 plus 1 dimensions with 4 supercharges, contains a gauge field and a real scalar and fermions. Okay. So sigma is an adjoint valued partner of the gauge field in 2 plus 1 dimensions. It's a real scalar, and as opposed to the X field, which are in chiral multiplets, and they are complex scalars.
Can I ask you a question on your previous transparency where you had done the Lagrangian?
Yeah, the unique case where there is a Lagrangian.
Yeah, do you really mean the kinetic terms are X dagger X for this conformal field theory? Or it's really some function that you don't know, right?
Yeah, but I'm going to take the canonical form for that.
Well, the fixed point that surely flows to some S. So this is a Lagrangian that flows to the conformal field theory that you're interested in.
Yeah, so I wouldn't, since it's a default theta term, I don't have much to say about this. I can only argue that there is a non-trivial fixed point, and the dynamics is determined by those two guys, but not by this one.
But you're not claiming the metric is induced from the restriction of the W?
No, I cannot claim anything. No, nothing. I mean, perhaps the symmetries will be able to limit or constrain the types of metrics, but again, I don't have much to say about that. Yeah.
You didn't tell us how many supersymmetries you have.
4 supercharges. So it's n equals 1 in 3 plus 1, and n equals 2 in 2 plus 1. Sometimes it may happen that I have accidental supersymmetry in the infrared. Okay, but the generic supersymmetry is going to be 4 supercharges. Any other questions? Okay. So let's look at the third equation over here. And we see that if we are taking only a single d-blame, then all of those equations become, they are not matrix valued anymore, these are just numbers. And the third equation will just set all the sigmas to be equal, independent of the index A. Okay? Then I go back to the second equation, and I find that all the Philopoulos terms are lying on the same line. Okay, so for many scales that I would imagine to have, there's only one of them. Now, I reduce the problem on to just one. And furthermore, what I can say is that this D-term equation can be thought of as a fibration of a Calabi-Yau 3 over a line. Okay, so these vacuum equations define a fibration of a Calabi-Yau 3 over a line such that the total space will be a Calabi-Yau 4. Okay? So each Philopoulos term will open a two cycle such that the total space will be a Calabi-Yau 4. Any questions? It's not an easy thing to view. I mean, it takes some time to get used to this notion.
What forced the sigmas to be equal again? Sorry?
If you look at this, you want to solve this for the case of n equals 1, number of brains equals to 1, then if x's are different than 0, then sigmas must be equal. Right? Because they commute, this is just numbers. Any other questions?
Why is it the case that the total space is fibration is climbing up?
That's going to be this is the simplest statement that I can say by just observing these equations. It took me months to get to this simple statement, but now we can just look at examples and see how it goes. Okay. Well, you're not satisfied by the answer. Well. Let's look at the first example, and then we'll see what goes. Okay, this is flow chart which describes how to start with the input that I take from the Lagrangian. The details are not so important. It's just something that you can feed into a computer. You can take the gauge theory data and the matter fields together with the Chern Simons levels and the superpotential. You feed it into some algorithm, and then the output that you get is the description of the toric diagram of the Calabi-Yau 4. And the claim is that all of these tilings in 2 plus 1 dimensions will give you a Calabi-Yau 4. Okay? Now, let's see what are the conditions for solving these vacuum equations.
Sorry, what's the interpretation of the Chern-Simons level in terms of brains probing the Calabi-Yau 4 singularity? Is it known? They're fluxes or something?
Yeah, so there are fluxes. If you think of it as a type 2A brain setup with the Neve-Schwarz 5 brains that are the edges stand for this, for Neve-Schwarz 5 and that wraps the toes, then there is a compact scalar that lives on the type 2A Neve-Schwarz 5 brain, and that compact scalar can have a non-zero flux. So there will be a one-form field strength, and it can have a non-zero flux around the tile. Each tile has such a thing, and the sum of all of them is zero because there is a net zero flux around the torus. That's and there are other interpretations. Any other questions? Okay, so how do we go and solve the vacuum equations? Instead of thinking about this algorithm that we saw before, this one over here, let's try to think about it in more intuitive terms. Okay, so let's solve the equations step by step. If I solve first the F terms, just the solution to the F terms, then obviously I'll get a moduli space which is larger than 3 and larger than 4, right? It's going to, and I'm going to call this space the master space. Why is it the master space? Because it has a very nice physical interpretation. It is the space of baryons and mesons in my theory, not just the Calabi-Yau 3 or the Calabi-Yau 4, depending on whether I'm in 3 plus 1 or 2 plus 1 dimensions. It also tells me how the baryons are related to the mesons. Okay? So I want to know what is the master space. I want to know what is the solution to F-term equations in each of these cases. Okay? Once I know the solution to this, I'll go to the second set and I'll solve for the D terms. And as we noticed, some of them vanish and some do not. Okay, so if we look back at this equation over here, I can write down a D term like that. And the right hand side is non-zero if k's are non-zero. But I can always set it up in such a way that I take linear combinations of the left-hand side and zero on the right-hand side. In fact, I have many ways of arranging such that the right-hand side will be zero. I have g minus two ways of doing that. Any kernel of the vector of k's and the vector of ones is going to be a solution such that the right-hand side will be zero. That's why I wrote down the matrix C over here. Right. So any kernel of this matrix will give me a right-hand side equal to zero. And what I'm going to do is divide by all of these details. Right? Once I divide by all of these D-terms, I claim that I get the Calabi-Yau 4. Okay? So let's see an example, and here I emphasize again that the Chern sinus levels, the way we should think of them, is as finely plus them. Okay. Before we get to the examples, I'd like to emphasize some tools that we are using. So, I mean, I have a conformal field theory over here, either in 3 plus 1 or in 2 plus 1, and I want to be able to characterize it using some features. So there are the traditional features like scaling dimensions, OPEs, chiral ring, and so on. But then there are some other notions that I want to introduce, and that one of them is the master space. And as I said, the physical meaning of the master space is the space of baryons and mesons together.
Sorry, you already imposed all the conditions for getting a conformal theory. You're starting now with the theory that you know is conformal.
Yeah, my claim is that all of the tilings, each tiling gives a conformal field theory.
How did you show that?
No, I didn't show it. In 3 plus 1 dimensions, I can argue that the beta functions vanish, and I can argue that by requiring flatness of the tiling, and this I can show. I won't do it, but it's possible to show. Yeah, you use the NSVZ and you use the requirement that the superpotential will have R charge too. So that's what you would call the Lie-Strauss law analysis. And also in 2 plus 1 dimensions, I can argue that there is an ADS dual, ADS-4 dual, just because the moduli space is always the Calabi-Yau 4. Perhaps there are better arguments for that. But at this point,
Do you have like a putative ADS dual, or do you actually have? You can actually argue through like some duality arguments that this really is the ADS dual.
I can compute the moduli space. Right? And then I argue that there is an M2 brain that probes this space, and the near horizon limit is an ADS 4 times H7, and I give you the explicit form, and now we can perform checks on that. Do I have a proof? No. I just
ABJM is a special case of his construction. So
the trivial case, yeah. The simplest case. I don't mean to.
Right, but to the extent like people that, have found evidence for ABJM, that evidence can be regarded as some kind of evidence that your conformal, that your CFT ADS correspondence is correct.
Yeah, and soon I will show you some other arguments which use scaling dimensions when we get there. What I meant by saying the trivial case is by, so every formulation has the simplest case. Okay, the most simplest styling. So the simplest styling is this model. Or if you take in 3+1 dimensions, the simplest styling is the one hexagon model, and that gives you the n equals 4 gauge theory. Okay, so if I have a set of conformal field theories, it better be that the simplest case will be the most familiar or most studied model, and it's satisfied in both situations.
And there's definitely one way, right? Because there's things like cyber design.
Yes, so what's the question?
It only goes one way. You go from field theory to geometry, not the other way.
Yeah, so I can have cases where for the same geometry, there will be more than one gauge theory.
Just one point, your analysis is a lot stronger than the Weiss-Strasbourg one, because a lot of your theories have origin on most dimensions and never go through weak coupling. And for that, they can only give a genericity argument, whereas you actually give a construction in terms of three brands at some singularity. So you have much stronger evidence, actually, that these theories exist.
Okay. Well, but I do need to assume that there is an ADS 4 times SE.
Can't you actually write down the solution in terms of some complex
code? In 3+1 dimensions, you have maximization, which allows you to compute the scaling dimensions. In 2+1, there's no field theory analog of that.
But in 3+1, where they made their arguments, I think you're
yeah. Concerned. Yeah.
In 3+1, can you construct the fractional brands?
Yes. So yeah. In some cases, it's done explicitly, in some, but in general, I think yes. Any other questions? Okay, so these are notions that we are playing with all the time, and this is a notion that I want to ask myself each time that I study a conformal field theory. What is the master space? What is the lattice of generators? Here I should explain. Every supersymmetric gauge theory has a chiral ring. This chiral ring is finitely generated. There is a collection of generators. These generators carry charges, and therefore I can plot the set of charges on a lattice, and I want to know how this lattice looks like, right? So that's a way I will use to identify the theory. And then some more technical terms, but because of the way this talk goes through, let me just mention those names without explaining what they are. Castellan matrix and perfect matchings. At this point, I just say that these are useful objects for computing all of this information. Okay, next, what is the master space? So the master space, by definition, is the solution to the F-term equations. What can I say about this? If I do take the action to be in 3+1 dimensions, then it's going to be the combined baryonic and mesonic moduli space.
It's just for U1.
U1, yes, yeah, single brain. Yeah. If it's more than that, then it's going to be a more complicated object. Let's just restrict to the case n equals 1. And the feature of this is that the master space is toric. It is singular, non-compact, Calabi-Yau, and a cone of dimension g plus 2. Okay, so it's higher dimensional singular Calabi-Yau.
Why is it Calabi-Yau? I mean, in the moduli space, you would expect it to be Calabi-Yau, but this thing is...
You could construct it using a linear sigma model description, and then find that the matrix of charges always has zero trace.
So do you want to raise the same singularity, give, you know, some CFT with this kind of moduli space, or... is there some reason that this should have turned out to be
one? N equal one. One brain.
One D brain, yeah. one D brain and take I don't know C3 mod Z3, then the master space is five dimensional because the number of gauges.
You expect the moduli space at least at a classical level to be to reproduce the Calabi.
Yeah, of course. Right. Yeah. But why do you expect this to be? This is not the moduli space. Yeah. You'll get the moduli space after imposing two more equations.
Yeah.
So it's confusing that this is a Calabi. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
This is the affine quotient before he takes the quotient.
Yeah.
So
I do take a quotient by the F terms, but not by the D terms. And so you're not satisfied by explanation of the linear sigma model?
I'm not saying that you're lying. I'm just curious as to what the physical explanation is.
In fact, you know, at first I was excited about these moduli spaces being Calabi out, but it turns out that many supersymmetric gauge theories have a moduli space which is Calabi out, even if they are not toric. For example, super QCD.
But this isn't the moduli space.
Right.
This is the space of bions and mesons, so it's a very important notion for the gauge theory.
But without having imposition,
yeah. So well, but it just tells you what are the different baryonic directions you can take. Still physical. If you are interested in the mesonic moduli space, but there are also baryons. The baryons are important objects, and I want to also understand them. So if I'm interested only in the mesonic moduli space, yes, I'll have to divide by further details. But if I'm also interested in the way the baryons behave and the way the moduli space of baryons behave, then I'll have to consider this object. That's why I'm saying this is a new tool to understand those conformal field theories. Okay? So if you take indeed this master space and you divide by further D terms, you'll get the mesonic moduli space. Okay, because this is only the solution to F terms. If I will solve by F and D terms, I'll get the mesonic moduli space. If I'll only solve by F terms, then I'll get the master space, and I'll get an understanding of what the baryons are. Okay? So here's the first example. This is chessboard tiling, and chess silence levels 1 and minus 1. So one for the first gauge group, minus one for the second. In fact, it doesn't matter. And I can write down the Lagrangian, and by this, here I'm specifying exactly what is the Lagrangian in 2+1 dimensions. And I can write down the superpotential like that, and compute the moduli space. Moduli space turns out to be C4, and how does it go? So let's go over the vacuum equations. If I set the number of brains to be 1, then the superpotential is identically 0 because those fields can commute. And then I have no F terms. I don't need to divide by any F terms. And the moduli space is just C4. Okay? So the master space is C4. Now, if I look at the third set of equations, as we said, it sets the sigmas to be equal. And if I look at the second set of equations, what it does is just to say what the value of sigma is. Right? So if I move with the x's, I vary the x's, it only varies sigma. And remember that the second set of equation is a vibration of a Calabi out 3 over a complex line, and such that the total space would be a C4. I just set any value to the different four fields that I have over here, the x's, the four x's. They can admit any value, and the second set just says what sigma is. Okay? Any question about that?
If you set up the origin and x's, is there a moduli space of sigmas?
It's just a real line.
Just the line?
Yeah, but sigma is not a dynamical field, so it's not an independent field. It is determined by the second equation. Okay? Remember that sigma is the partner of the gauge field. The gauge field does not have a kinetic term. and it's not dynamical, and correspondingly sigma itself also is not dynamical.
You're saying in the term Simon's theory, the sigma field really has no kinetic term?
That's right.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. It's too large for the...
pure sigma sign, it's not a...
Yeah. Okay? Okay, so now I can just go on and apply, pick a tiling, pick your favorite tiling, and compute the moduli space and corresponding other features like scaling dimensions. So let's see some other examples. Well, I won't talk about chance silence levels on edges. That's just a trick. It won't add to the discussion that we had so far. So let's look at the this is also part of the discussion on chance silence levels on edges, and this is useful in computing the toric diagram, but I don't think that we are in this stage in order to see that. Next topic I want to discuss is the notion of toric duality. And I can ask, okay, suppose I saw one gauge theory with a superpotential interaction, chance silence level 1 and minus 1. Here's another gauge theory with two adjoints and two bifundamentals. Obviously, this is a different gauge theory. And I want to argue that this also has a moduli space, which is C4. Okay? Because I can do just the same analysis as before. I take number of points B equals to 1, and because of the commutator, the superpotential vanishes. There are no F terms, and so the moduli space is just C4, and it is, if you want, a different gauge theory for which the moduli space is C4. So that has to do with your question from before. I have two different gauge theories which have the same moduli space in the infrared.
Is the theory of the origin actually the same theory, or are they different CFTs of the origin?
As far as I can tell, at least the chiral spectrum is exactly the same. You could have a one-to-one map. You could map the generators in this case, the generators in this case. Perhaps the non-chiral spectrum would be the same, but I doubt it.
So wait, so the horizon is just S7, is it supposed
to... Yes. Yes, yes.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So this is just the
future
theory?
The infrared theory is the theory on the M2 brain on C4. And if I take the near horizon limit, then it describes ADS4 times S7.
So in 3+1 dimensions, there are various toric analogs of cyber duality, like the Bernstein-Douglas one or various other forms of it, which sort of explain why you get the same thing. Do you have something like that in 2+1 dimensions?
Not yet. That's a question which bothers me, the other people also, and I don't think we have a good answer for that. This point.
Cyber duality is monogamies, changing the brain charges, or what's the
change of basis?
Yeah, change of basis. I mean, there are various ways of phrasing it, but you can sort of formulate rules for modifying the quiver, which end up getting identical.
Yeah.
Theories in the infrared, in which you can relate very explicitly to cyber duality.
In fact, in terms of tilings, there is a nice answer to that, but that's
a 3+1 dimension.
Yeah,
answer.
Only in the context of 3+1. And I guess you know this thing, so let me just write it down for the other people. If I have a diagram, a tile of this type, then I can exchange it with the following. The tiling like this, okay. And the tiles are this way, and this is the action of Zeiberg duality on the tiling. So if I take a tile and replace it by these things, one can check that the quarks are replaced by dual quarks, then there are the mesons, and there are the Zeiberg interaction terms. The Zeiberg superpotential. Okay, but I don't have a good understanding it in 2 plus 1 dimensions. I can only show cases where it happens. Here's the tiling for the second model. It's given by one hexagon model where one of the edges is a double edge. It is a special tile which has only two edges, and that's why tile number two has one incoming and one outgoing arrows, as we see over here. Okay, so I can just write down, take this tiling, write down the Chern-Simons levels, compute the moduli space, and get that the moduli space is C4, and that leads to the notion of torque duality that we have discussed. I have two different gauge theories that lead in the infrared to the same moduli space. So I want to study this in a more systematic way. Well, in fact, I don't have a systematic way. I can just show examples where different tilings with the choice of Chern-Simons levels give the same moduli space. That's the reason for the notation here, Roman 2, because it's the second model that we consider for the conifold time C. Okay, so here's another tiling. If I will take this tiling in 3 plus 1 dimensions, then the moduli space will be the orbifold C2 mod Z2 times C. Okay, so 3 plus 1 dimensions, no Chern-Simons levels. I can compute the moduli space. It's three complex dimensions. If instead I consider it in 2 plus 1 dimensions and I put the Chern-Simons levels 1 and minus 1, then the moduli space becomes 4 dimensional and it is conifold times C. Okay? Notice the superpotential. Superpotential is purely cubic because the nodes are of valence 3, all of them. And this is very interesting because in 3 plus 1 dimensions, a cubic interaction term is the term which is marginal in the UV and also in the infrared. In 2 plus 1 dimensions, this term is not marginal in the UV. It is, in fact, a relevant term. It starts with dimension 3/2. And we expect it to flow to a non-trivial conformal field theory of R charge 2 or dimension 2 in the infrared. So that must mean that some of these fields, or perhaps all of them, admit a non-trivial scaling dimension. So I present this model as the simplest model with an ADS dual such that we develop non-trivial scaling dimensions. Right? For the C4 theory, this was a quartic interaction, and nothing funny happens. Right? For quartic interactions, all fields have dimension 1/2. This is the dimension of the free field, and there's no, if you want, strong coupling effects that lead to large anomalous dimensions.
The spectra of gauge invariant operators agree in the two theories.
Yes.
So as far as you can tell from the spectrum, it could be just free fields reshuffled.
Yes. Yeah. Just it's very like very much like the 3 plus 1 dimensional analog of the n equals 4 theory, that all of the chiral operators are just half dimension 1, and by multilinear objects in them also have a dimension which is just the sum. Now, the first case in which we don't get a sum is the case where you start taking non-chiral objects, and then there is a lot of work about the Konishi operator and so on, and I would expect that the same thing will happen over here. Right? But as long as we deal with the chiral spectrum, it's just a trivial spectrum, collection of free fields. Okay, so let's see how we go about and compute the scaling dimension. So the moduli space is conifold times C, so that gives me an advantage. If I check the details, I see that phi parameterizes the complex line and the x's parameterize the conifold. So since phi parameterizes a flat space, I would expect a dimension 1/2, the dimension of free field for it. And then the remaining 3/2 I would divide equally among the x's just because they appear in a symmetric fashion. So So the scaling dimension will be 3/4. Right? So this is a hand-waving argument of why the dimensions are like that. I can come up with this prediction. Well, we said these things, non-trivial scaling dimensions, and I get 3/4 for the x's and 1/2 for the phi's. Okay? Very good. So now I can go and look at the corresponding Sasaki-Einstein, compute the volume, do volume minimization, and get the same result. Okay? So this I can consider as a test of the ADS-CFT, even though it's a weak test, because I didn't really use a field-theoretic mechanism, but rather a symmetry argument that says that the dimensions are 1/2 and 3/4. If I won't have this symmetry reasoning, then I'm stuck again, because I don't have a generic computation, a field-theoretic computation of the dimensions, only an ADS computation, right? So it's a weak test of ADS-CFT. Any questions? Okay. Next thing that I can use is to draw the toric diagram. As I said, the toric diagram is, well, in fact, I'm going to, well, if you want, what I can extract from this toric diagram is that these four points correspond to the conifold. This single line above them is just the complex line. One nice feature is that there are two points which are opposite each other and another two points which are opposite in this direction, which tell me that the global symmetry is SU2 cos SU2, and there is an additional U1 and another U1. So from the toric diagram, I can read the global symmetry of the problem. Okay. Later, I will also show the lattice of generators, which tell me how the chiral ring is constructed, the way to think about the chiral ring. Okay? So let's turn on to the next set of examples. I have here three different theories with five fields. They all look very different. Here are the superpotentials, and each one of them has a tiling description. What's common to all of them is that if I compute the master space, namely the solution to the F terms, then for one brain, this is going to vanish. All of these superpotentials are going to vanish, and therefore the master space is C5. Right? So as I said before, the master space is the combined baryonic and mesonic moduli space. And in order to get the four-dimensional Calabi-Yau I'm interested in, I'll have to divide by a single D term after that. And the Chern-Simons levels are going to tell me which particular D term I need to divide in order to get this Calabi-Yau 4. Okay, so here's the first case, the first example. It's given by the chessboard tiling where one of the edges is a double edge. Here's the Chern-Simons levels, 1 minus 1 and 0. And the moduli space turns out to be, I just apply the methods that I have, the moduli space is the conifold times C. It's second phase that we see, right? There was the two hexagon phase and this double double edge chessboard tiling. Both of them give the same moduli space, except that a difference with the previous, with the case of C4, is that it has one-dimensional baryonic moduli space. One-dimensional baryonic moduli space such that the combined mesonic baryonic moduli space is C5. And I can compute again the scaling dimensions. Again, here I can use scaling arguments. And then I get 1/2 and 3/8. Okay? Another case of non-trivial scaling dimensions. Here's another example. I can choose two different choices of Chern-Simons levels. Here's the tiling, the superpotential, well, it's not given over here, but you can compute it from the tiling. And then again, the moduli space is conifold times C. Okay? Here's the global symmetry. I mentioned those two SU2s. There's one U1 which is not R, one which is baryonic, and one which is R. And I can give the table of charges. This is a fairly standard computation. This constitutes the table of charges of the solution of this model. These are the three phases that we saw. I can also do the operator matching. This is toric duality, right? So by saying what are the generators of phase one and how they map to the generators of phase two, and generators of phase three, I can construct all possible chiral operators in the chiral region. Okay, so this is the answer to your question from before. There is an explicit map between all the different phases. And it's enough to get the map on the generators. Once I get the map on generators, then I have the map on all operators.
Okay, I thought that some of them had a five-dimensional master space and some of them had a four-dimensional master space.
Very good. So that's very nice.
Because the number of counting of operators is different.
That's very good. So the thing is that this is something that I was supposing not to talk about, but there is an alertness in the audience. So the thing is that sometimes the master space in 2 plus 1 dimensions is not just the combined baryonic and mesonic. It takes a different role depending on the phase that you deal with. So in 3 plus 1 dimensions, the master space is always the combined baryonic and mesonic moduli space. In 2 plus 1 dimensions, I'll have to work harder. Now the thing is that in this talk, most people don't know what is the master space, even in 3 plus 1 dimensions. So I had to spend a lot of time to explain what is the meaning and what is the intuition behind it. Okay? Now to get into the complication of where is the moduli space in 2 plus 1 and which one it's contains the baryons and which one it doesn't, it's probably too hard for one single talk.
So,
yeah, they match both in the baryonic, the total baryonic and mesonic moduli space. So here is a slide, some table which compares. There are three different phases. One of them contains two tiles, the other two contain three tiles, meaning two gauge groups, three gauge groups. The master space here is just the mesonic moduli space, but over here, in the second example, it is the combined mesonic and baryonic, and here also, again, it's the combined mesonic and baryonic. Over here, you could ask, what is the combined mesonic and baryonic? It turns out to be the space of perfect matchings that we didn't talk about. So it is there as a notion or an object, but it's a different object than what we are used to in 3 plus 1 dimensions. Okay. Any questions? Well, I think that we are all very tired. There's plenty of information. Most of it is new. Here's another thing that you could play with. I mean, the mesonic generators are linear in the two-tile phase, they are bilinear and bilinear. As you can see from this table, you see that these are bilinears, linear over here, linear, bilinear, right? So it gets different expressions in the different phases. Let me just say about the Hilbert series, and then I will show you some figures so that you just get an impression, but from now on it's going to get impressionistic. Here's the Hilbert series that I can compute for this model. This is the partition function that depends on five different variables, T1, T2, X1, and X2, and B. And what this partition function does is to count all possible chiral operators as a function of those five different variables. I can think of these variables as fugacities. namely exponential of chemical potentials, such that if I expand, let's say, in powers of B, and I take the coefficient of B to the K, then the coefficient of B to the K tells me precisely what are the operators that have baryon charge equal to K. Okay? So this is a partition function in the traditional way we think of it in statistical systems. Okay, so it's the partition function for this model, and if I want to count operators, that's what I'm going to do. This particular scaling is a scaling which is chosen just in order to fit with the different charges. T1 is, well, T is the Fugazi, which is dual to the R charge. Q is the U1, which is not R. B is the baryonic charge. X1 is the SU2, first SU2. X2 is the second SU2. So really, those fugacities are representing the different conserved charges in the system. Here's the lattice of generators. As you may have seen, there were five different generators. I can plot how they look like, and they live on a pyramid. And so that's the way I think of the chiral ring. So instead of thinking about the chiral ring, I can represent it by such a lattice. Okay. Let me just...
How's the chiral ring without relations? Because there was nothing in the numerator of your...
The combined baryonic and mesonic moduli space does not have relations. The mesonic moduli space does have a single relation. It is a complete intersection, though. Even the most cases are not even a complete intersection. Not for the master space and not for the mesonic moduli space.
Can you translate that into
like
the
zero sum? That's the... That's one. This is the first step in getting into a GLSM description.
I mean, I'm just saying, can you take your field theory and tell me the charges of the GLSM?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I just didn't put it over here. It's in the paper, explicit. And when you solve that, that's what the perfect matching do. Perfect matchings are the fields in the linear sigma model. I didn't explain what they are, but yeah. And I use the Castle-Lie matrix in order to compute the perfect matchings. Again, I didn't explain. So this in fact, I mean, I should make a distinction between the lattice of generators and the toric diagram. It so happens that for the conifold time C, the lattice of generators and the toric diagram are the same, but in fact they are dual to each other. Dual in the sense of replacing a face by a node, an edge by an edge, and a node by a face. As you can see, this pyramid has five faces, five nodes, and how many edges? I think...
Eight, right?
So it's self-dual, but in cases in which it is not self-dual, then there is a very important distinction between the lattice of generators and the toric diagram. So the lattice of generators generates the chiral ring. The toric diagram gives you the linear model, linear sigma model description. Okay. Sorry? Yeah, except that it's in one dimension higher. Yeah. Okay. I'll just go through all of these. We'll talk about funnels. Let's go to the summary. Toric diagram. Here's an example of lattice of generators, which is not the dual this is the manifold M111. People were interested in this manifold because it has an isometry SU3 cross SU2 cross U1, similar to that of the sound model. In fact, we could also see the structure of the SU3. You see that there are 10 points on this direction over here, corresponding to the 10-dimensional representation of SU3. And there are 3 points over here, corresponding to the 3-dimensional representation of SU2. Yeah, P1 cross P2. And the okay, that's we are back to the 80s. And except that now we could think of it in a different way. We can write down the Chern-Simons interaction using tiling, using a very specific Chern-Simons choice of Chern-Simons levels. And we can do this analysis again, lattice of generators, Hilbert series. We can study toric duality and so on. Scaling dimensions, maybe I'll show you the scaling dimensions. Do I have the scaling dimensions? Yeah, this is the scaling. So this is the table of scaling dimensions, which was already computed in the 80s because people knew how to do Kaluza-Klein reduction on M111 because it was a homogeneous space. And they did find those values, 4/9 and 1/3. What we do new in this case is that we are able to provide the dual gauge theory, and we are able to match between the chiral operators of the gauge theory and the Kaluza-Klein spectrum, which was done back in the 80s.
Sorry, you had a field there of R charge zero?
Yeah.
Doesn't that?
It never.
There must be unitarity bound.
Yeah, but it's not a gauge invariant field. Those are the perfect matchings, and they are, in this particular example, they are always bilinear. So whenever S appears, it appears with one of these three over here. And so the set of, even the generators of the master space don't have it as a single object.
So the 0, 0 doesn't mean it's a gauge singlet.
No, it's just, it corresponds to the, in the toric diagram, it corresponds to, where is the toric diagram? Here. So it corresponds to this internal point. The R charges are carried by external points, and the internal points carry always R charge zero. And in fact, each point like that corresponds to a divisor in the Sasaki-Einstein 7. And the volume of that divisor gives you the R charge or the corresponding. So it's 4/9 and 1/3 that we saw. Okay, let's summarize. We should go. Here are nice figures. Okay, so here's the summary. What are the results that we have so far? We have a mesonic moduli space of vacua, which is always a Calabi-R 4 for each tiling that we choose and each Chern-Simons levels that satisfy the conditions we said. Leads to an interacting superconformal field theories in the infrared. Non-trivial scaling dimensions, as we saw. And in fact, we can match some perhaps condensed matter systems, whatever we wish. The master space, here I wrote the word that it is a partial baryonic and mesonic moduli space. The discussion on it depends on the case, and I don't have, I can show you cases in which it is partially the baryonic and mesonic moduli space and cases in which it is not. And we also know how to compute the Hilbert series, which is the partition function as a function of fugacities conjugate to conserved charges. Okay? We can talk about toric duality. And in general, what we can say is that all theories are conjectured to live on the world volume of N2 brains, which are probably in Calabi-R 4. And that's the mesonic moduli space. But we have to remember that there are also baryons in this theory. We find infinite families of superconformal field theories, and each tiling gives rise to its own conformal field theory. We know how to write down the Lagrangian. We know how to compute scaling dimensions. These are questions that we can ask ourselves, how many there are, but let's not discuss that. This is also some result that we had in the past. I think we are done by now. Thank you.
This might be a pretty dumb question, but I was just wondering, so like if you had five arrows that seem like the master space would be C5, and so and everything like for the bar entry, you just have one arrow, and you have, like if you look at a representation of this quadrant, you have one arrow and you have a C there. But then all the other ones have to be, I mean you could all the arrows coming out of one vertex have a C. But then all the other arrows have to have zeros on them.
Okay.
But then that wouldn't really be C5, it would be like, because you're required to have zeros on the other.
Yeah, but I'll have to also take into account the F term and the D terms.
Well, so once you have like non-cycles in it, so the mnemonic stuff.
Yeah.
Then you have to, then it wouldn't mean that you don't get just like C5 or
yeah, that will be when I take into account the D-terms, one of the D-terms. So when I take into account one of the D-terms, that means that I'm restricting attention to the mesonic moduli space. Right? If I don't, then I'm looking at the baryonic moduli space. And I emphasize, both of them are physically important. Just depends on the application that you have in mind.
Thank you.
Well, okay.